How you doing, everyone? And welcome to Big Blue Kickoff. I'm Russ Salzberg, joined by the one and only Paulie Dotz, formerly known as Paul Dottino, but we had his name legally changed to Paulie Dotz. Again, the number to call, 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. And without further ado, because Paulie Dotz's head is about to explode, because he just saw with his own eyes a very good sight for all Giant fans, Paulie, why don't you tell everybody what's going on?
Odell Beckham is in gear. He is at practice. He has warmed up. He has done a bunch of limbering up exercises, moving very fluidly on his sprained ankle. Now, right after the warm-ups, they did take him off to the side where he was doing some more specialty exercises with the trainers. In a very short while, the media will be kicked out of practice. You know, we only get a short time for the media to watch. It remains to be seen what Beckham will do after the media is kicked out. I don't necessarily expect that he will take any practice snaps while the media is out there watching, but who knows what he's going to do after they leave. I can only tell you this. To this point, it looks like a very good sign for Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, listen, you and I were talking about it yesterday. I think the bottom line with all Giant fans, and more importantly within the Giant organization, it remains day-to-day. And when I say day-to-day, it's going to be a game-time decision, no matter if he's feeling well or not, because he is Odell Beckham Jr. You don't want to chance anything with the high ankle injury. Having said that, though, moving forward, listen, you and I, watching him move around, he took the trip to New England last week.
He did.
He wouldn't have done that if progress wasn't being made. But at this juncture, you're going to be careful. Like you say, I think it's all positive. And listen, today's Wednesday. Game is Sunday night. You got to concentrate. You know, everybody's, and I'm sure we'll get into it today, everybody's talking about Ezekiel Elliott and playing Sunday night. They can't worry about Ezekiel Elliott right now. They got to worry about what the Giants need to do, whether he plays or he doesn't play.
Yeah, it's more about the availability of their guy than Dallas's guy. I will say Odell Beckham Jr. did have his catching gloves with him, which does lead me to believe he'll do at least some catching exercises, if not take snaps. He's certainly going to be working with the football. I will tell you this, and just understanding, as you said, Russ, when he was up in New England on that trip last weekend and he did a little bit of warming up before the game, but not much strenuous stuff. I mean, he was just wearing his regular artificial turf shoes and nothing, no wrap, no boot, no crutches, no nothing. So I'm with you. I think the signs are all pointing good unless he has some kind of setback. And I'll tell you what, I will sweep the floor to make sure there are no banana peels in front of him.
Well, I'll tell you this. Looking back, the moment he was injured, I would have glared at that very juncture. When he went down in that Cleveland game, I would have signed up for, if he only has to miss the opener, I would have taken it right then and there, because that looked like it could have been a, don't like to use the term,
nasty.
Crippling. It
nasty.
Could have been a very, very serious injury, and I think if it was on grass, it would have been a...
You mean artificial turf.
Artificial turf. It would have been a very serious injury. If that cleat, if the toe cleat would have been in the ground and stayed 2 seconds longer, God knows what would have happened. But listen, the new season starts. The future is now. We're playing for keeps. Mm-hmm. And Sunday night in Big D doesn't get bigger than that.
It does not. And knowing Odell as we do, he is a competitor to the 100th degree. You know, if there's any way physically possible that he can get on the field, that's what he's going to do, because this guy absolutely fumes at not being able to play. I mean, that's the kind of guy he is.
Well, that's why he is, as he says, he would like to be the highest paid player in the league. I don't know if that's going to happen, or I should say it's not going to happen, but he is going to be the highest paid wide receiver in the league at some juncture. Let's put it that way. Having said that, I know you're always optimistic. You got your big blue pom-poms and you're ready to go, but everybody puts so much stock and weight into the season opener because it's Dallas, it's a rival, it's a division game. What's the term? Do you think they can be, I don't want to say too amped up, or, you know, there's an expression, don't let the moment get too big. Do you think that Ben McAdoo has his reins on that?
Well, I think what they have to understand, and I've heard a number of the players talk about this, Russ, is that it's only one game. And you can't – I think it was Eli who said you can't win the Super Bowl in September. I think they get it. I think they understand it. I think that, you know, it would be a more important win for the Giants, I think, than it would be for Dallas, because to make a statement against the defending division champions in their building in week one is a big deal, because Dallas is going to have to come back to the Meadowlands, to MetLife Stadium, much later on in the season, and you want them to be able to climb uphill in a hostile environment here in New Jersey.
Right.
So I think the win is worth more to the Giants than it is the Cowboys.
Well, especially because it's on the road, you know, if they get it on the road. Now, having said that, though, I want you, and I'm not suggesting that the Giants aren't going to win the game. Not at all, heaven forbid. But I am telling you in particular, Paulie Dodds, to take the advice of one Eli Manning. It is only one game, because God forbid they do not win. The unhappiest camper on the plane coming home is going to be one Paulie Dodds. We know that, and you know that.
You know, it's funny. I think that, you know, this team, we've discussed it many times before, even off the air, Russ. It's a team built to contend, and it's built to contend now.
Right.
It really is. And they have every right to believe that they've got a legitimate chance to go to the Super Bowl. They really do.
Listen, you and I have been covering this team 30 years. I will say this. I'm not saying it's the best Giants team, but this is a Giants team that is one of their better teams that we've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, I would not argue that at all.
Because in the end...
Potentially.
But in the end, and we'll get to the calls right away, it's 201-939-4513 or hashtag Giants chat. You're talking about defense wins. And with defense winning, the situation is they have a great defense. And if the offense does what we all think it can do, it can be a special. Yeah. Having said that, let's open up the phone lines. Let's go to Len in Columbia, Maryland. Len, how are you today, my friend?
Hey, good. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Len.
How you doing?
All right.
Yeah,
how are you?
Yeah, and welcome to Russ. Although I haven't been listening for the last couple of days, is this Russ's first appearance?
Yesterday was Russ's first appearance. This
okay.
is Russ's
okay.
second appearance.
I missed you yesterday, Russ.
You'll be seeing me every Tuesday and Wednesday. What can we do for you, Len, now that we've gotten the pleasantries out of the way?
You know, first of all, throw out some credit here. I thought Jerry in the front office and the acquisitions people did a great job in putting together, you know, first the 90-man roster from whom we could choose. And then getting it down to 53, I think we got a heck of a team here. But I like the way he approached the offseason. I think he did a really nice job with draft and free agency, and even the undrafted free agents. Geez, what did we get? Three of those made the team. That's really pretty good.
Well,
that's good scouting.
Yeah,
that's good scouting.
Listen. It's very easy to pick, and Paul, you know this, and it's very easy to pick a first-rounder or a second-rounder. It's when you get down to, like, the three, the four or the five or the six or the free agents, you know, a guy by the name of Victor Cruz was a free agent.
Yep.
A mainstay on our – not that the Giants drafted him or initially signed him. A guy by the name of Snacks, Damon Harrison, was an undrafted free agent.
The Jets, yeah.
You know, I mean, so that's when, you know, in baseball, they call the scouts bird dogs. Well, that's when you really, really do earn your money.
Len, I remember when Bill Parcells was here, and they had their really quality teams of the late 80s into the 90s,
mm-hmm.
and,
mm-hmm.
you know, won the two Super Bowls.
Right.
We always used to go into the offseason as media guys and look at the roster and say, okay, how many legitimate spots do they have? I mean, if they're going to have 7, 8, 9, 10 draft picks, how many of these guys could really make this team? Because, boy, those Giants teams were really good,
right.
really good. And we would often say, there's probably 4 spots on the roster, maybe. And that's typically what you want to have, a team that goes into the offseason saying, boy, it's so good, there's not a lot of room for guys. But yet this Giants team, which is very good, did find room at certain spots to pick up guys who they can absolutely positively use. We talked about it going into the draft. It was an important draft for this team because they were going to have to get the right guys who could help them contribute immediately so that they could make a run. And I think they did.
You know, and right there, you know, and Paul, you've heard me say this before. I'm a big proponent of the core of the team being right there, the 4 to 8 year guys. And even down to this last transaction where they picked up the D-back, you know, the trade for the D-back from Pittsburgh.
Cockrell.
You know, he went for the veteran, a guy who's played, you know, played NFL games, mm-hmm. played big games in the NFL. And, you know, you go for that kind of guy when you're filling out your roster, and you do that if you think you're really, you know, you really got a shot at it. And I know the three of us think they're going to be playing in late January, and I hope we're right about that. Listen, Sunday night, look, I think we're going to win the game. I'm biased. I always think they're going to win, but I think they're going to win, and for a very simple reason. I think we're going to put better players on the field.
Well, but you hear what you're just saying, and thank you very much for the call. And the most important thing is putting them on the field, because right now we're just talking about what's on paper. You know, Paul and I have seen them on the field, but the games haven't started yet. Yet, yes, Jerry has done a tremendous job, but I don't know that we're putting better players on. I know it's going to be a tough football game. It's going to be Sunday night, national TV game. You don't have to have the best players. You just have to have the upper hand and the final score. That's all that matters. All right, let's go back to what do you say we check out Philip in Montclair. Phil, how you doing today?
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's
up?
All
right. I just want to talk about this Sunday's game. You know, I agree with the last caller. I think we do have the better players. You know, I'm worried about the line a little bit. Do you see anything, any shakeups happening if they don't perform well?
Well,
the offensive line?
Look, we're talking about one game. I mean, there's not performing, Paul, up to standard. There's also performing if you have a collapse. I mean, right. if they don't win the game, it doesn't mean they're bad. I think we have seen some improvement. Let's continue with the improvement. Oh, you and I were talking earlier. I think, Phil, to me, they don't have to open up gaping holes. They need to give their running back some daylight. And most importantly, number 10 has to remain upright.
Yeah, no one's going to argue with that, Russ.
Do you see anything like draft him like in game? Like, oh, this guy's not playing good. Put somebody else in there. Like, you don't see anything like that.
The only thing I will say to you, of the five starting offensive linemen, it's quite clear that Ben McAdoo, when he told us in our broadcast production meeting before the Patriots game, that John Jerry has had a less than stellar training camp. And it's obvious when you look at his play, Russ.
We were talking about that with David Deal yesterday.
Yeah, because usually he's really solid in pass protection, needs some help with the run stuff, but he had some bad pass protection faux pas here during the course of August. So, he's kind of been put on alert because Brett Jones and DJ Fluker have both taken first-team reps at right guard, which has to tell John Jerry that, hey, it's time to clean up my act. Because these guys are pushing me.
I happen to think in that particular situation, and thanks for the call, Phil, it's not so much that he's regressed talent-wise, John Jerry. I think maybe, I don't want to label somebody lazy, maybe you've taken a little bit for granted, and you know what they say? Depth leads to competition, and competition mm-hmm. makes you better. And just as you said, Brett Jones and Fluka, all of a sudden, like exactly in the words you just said, maybe I gotta watch myself. I got look who's looking over my shoulder. They're catching up to me.
I would expect John Jerry to come out like a house of fire in Dallas, because there's nothing that will light a match more than a guy standing right behind you.
Without question, Jeff in Rhode Island. Jeff, how we doing?
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good.
Hi.
Looks like we got the Giants version of the sweater and the schmoozer going on here.
There you go.
Hey, anyways, Paulie, I have a question for you. I know you will have the answer to it. And some clarification I need in regards to Mark Kurzlik being placed on the IR.
Yeah.
As we all know, last weekend. Now, was he placed on the IR because the rules say that he must be placed on the IR, or could have the Giants designated him waive injured and, you know, going that route? Or did they must have they placed him on the IL?
Okay, first of all, he had a stinger several weeks ago after the first preseason game and had not played since. And when he was in practice for only a few shots, I mean, he wasn't even in every practice. The few times they put him out there, he was wearing a yellow jersey, which means no contact.
Right.
So unlike the red jersey on quarterbacks, which means you can't touch the quarterback, on the other side of the ball, they'll put a yellow jersey on a guy, which means he can't be touched. So that tells you that, you know, medically speaking, he was not ready to be on the 53 as one of their active players. So by putting him on the injured reserve list before the 53 was finalized, he is now out for the season. They don't have a choice about bringing him back.
Jeff,
I understand that, but I was my question was more in regards to what the rules say.
Well, they could have waited.
Did they have to do it? Did they have?
No, they didn't have to. They could have put him on the 53, waited till the 53 was finalized, then put him on the injured reserve after the 53, which meant he could come back after 8 weeks. But here's the thing: if you do that, you're going to have to expose one of the guys who's healthy and you want to keep, because you got to swap that peg out. And now you're exposing somebody for that one day so that you can have the option of bringing Herzlick back.
Jeff, it sounds like you're a big Mark Herzlick fan.
Well, no, yeah, I like him because, you know, he's from BC and I'm a New Englander and, I love the Giants. But all I want to know is, could the wave injured designation have come into play?
Well, they could have. They could have, I believe, given him some type of injury settlement. Asking me. You could always do that with a player, but the Giants felt that this was the best way to go. They didn't want to expose another guy, you know, to the 53.
I understand that. I understand that.
Thanks very much for the call, Jeff. Appreciate it.
Have a good day, guys.
You know, the situation with Mark Herzlick, look, we're getting into a situation, favorite within the organization. A lot of people like Mark.
He's been a good special teams player.
No, without question. Though, these are the things that happen, though, when you have more depth and you have younger guys. It's the hardest part about professional sports, and I'll tell you something, it's the hardest part about covering teams in professional sports. You get to know people, and you see what a gentleman is, what a good guy is. They become favorites of yours. There comes a point, it happens to the best of them. I remember being down, as you were, down in the old Giant Stadium, down in the press room, when a guy by the name of Phil Sims said goodbye. You remember that day? There was nothing sadder than that. It happens to everybody. Now, I'm not saying that's the end, but, you know, it happens to players. This is what happens when Jerry Reese and people are doing a good job. You get more talent.
I like what you said at the beginning of that comment, Russ. It's about depth. Because if the Giants did not have such good depth, if they weren't so sold on their 53 as being all guys who could contribute, they might have taken a chance and said, okay, we'll leave that one guy off, we'll take the shot, we'll keep Herzlick another day, and then we'll make the move. But they feel so strongly about the value of the 53 that they picked, they weren't going to take that chance.
Look, you and I were talking about it yesterday. We both like a young man who's now on a practice squad, Travis Rudolph.
Yeah.
And we both like him. And we both
got away.
And we both wanted him on the team. But as you and I discussed, well, who would you have put him on in place of? Would it have been Roger Lewis? Would it have been Tavares King? And then you brought up the fact, special teams, this and that, guys that have been there for a year. You know, it's depth. And depth does wonderful things in terms of personnel. It makes you stronger. You know, now that does mean sometimes you got to say goodbye to somebody. And again, it doesn't mean it's goodbye, but for this year it is in terms of Mark Herzlick.
Just remember one thing, Russ. Ben McAdoo said this 2 weeks ago, and he has repeated it a number of times. He knew going into that final cut, he said, we have more than 53 NFL players.
Yeah, he did.
He knew it.
And I'll tell you what, I think his final cuts this year were much more difficult. I'm not just talking since Ben's been here, but I'm saying in the last 10 years, they had a lot of difficult decisions to make this year. I think the competition in camp this year was extremely high.
Certainly since 2012, at the very least.
For sure. All right, what do you say we go to Bam Bam in Rockville Center? Bam Bam, how you doing today?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
I think we're all having a better day than Craig Carton is so far.
Unfortunately.
But I wanted to give my Giants predictions for the season. Paul, I think Paul thinks I'm a negative guy, but I'm actually not. I might be down on the O-line, but I'm overall, I'm positive. I got this team at 11-5.
Okay.
We're gonna be the 3 seed, and my 2 breakout guys on offense, I think everybody's forgetting about him, is Shepard. I think will be the biggest beneficiary of the Brandon Marshall signing and the Evan Engram picks. I think people are kind of forgetting about him. I think he's going to feast underneath. And I think Eli Apple takes the next step for us this year on defense. Him and Goodson and Thompson are young guys, all in their second year, but I think he's got the highest ceiling. I got us at 11-5. We'll win the division, 3 seed. And then at that point, like pretty much it is every year, a few bounces of the balls. You never know. We could be in the Super Bowl. So I'll hang up and hear your thoughts. Thanks, guys.
Okay, Bam Bam. Well, I'll disagree with Bam Bam on one thing. I don't think people have forgotten about Sterling Shepard at all. I don't know what you're reading or hearing, Bam Bam, but he's I agree with you. I think he will be very important, and I think he will have a good season, but he's not flying under the radar. Nobody's forgotten about him. He is a very important part of this team.
Yeah, there's no question. I do think I'm going to say it right now. Might as well, right? We keep saying we're going to wait till the end of preseason. Well, it's here. I think the Giants are a 10-6 team. I think it's a solid 10-6.
Well, 10-6, 11-5. You're in the
double
ballpark.
Digits.
You know, let the a bounce here, a made field goal there,
yeah.
A missed field goal here.
It could also go the other way, Russ.
Yeah,
too.
Well, we don't want to go.
We don't want to see that happen. But it could.
The other way.
But I think they're a solid 10-6 team. I do think they're the best team in the division. But having the NFC East play the AFC West this year in the rotation means that 10 wins probably will win the division.
Right.
Because these guys in this division are going to get beaten up. This is a nasty schedule that the Giants, Redskins, Cowboys, and Eagles have.
I just think, you know, talking about as we have been, you know, with the offensive line, we're talking about it at length yesterday, gets brought up today with our first caller. I think the situation with the offensive line, if they continue to improve and if that's going to mean that they're going to be a better ball control team. And if they're a better ball control team, that's just going to make the defense that much stronger because the defense won't get worn out having to do it over and over again. And listen, defense wins, and I really believe this defense has a chance. We said it several times. It's not just a matter of talent. When Jerry Reese when he signed those 3 free agents last year,
right.
Snacks, O.V. and
Jenkins.
And Jackrabbit, Janoris Jenkins. He knew the talent he was getting. He knew it was talent. I don't think any of us knew what kind of leadership all 3 would supply. So he got those 3, and then you have a guy, number 21, Landon Collins, in his second year, explode not just talent-wise but leadership as well. They are loaded that way on defense, absolutely loaded. So to me, barring injury, that's what excites me about the team. And you know what? Again, we're talking about the defense right now. We did it yesterday with David Deal. The one guy we haven't mentioned, JPP. JPP, none of us ever thought he would come back to be what he was. He might be better than he ever was.
There's a chance. There's a chance.
A legitimate chance.
There's a chance.
So, I mean, you're talking about leadership and talent up and down the line, defensive backfield, they are very, very strong.
Yeah.
Just to see what happens with the linebackers.
You know, the other day I was on Seattle Sports Radio, and they asked me about the Giants' defense, and I said, look, their starting 11 is the best in the NFL, bar none, and it's not close. And, of course, they got very angry with me because the Seahawks are out there in Seattle,
right.
And they think that they've got the best defense, and they just made that trade for Richardson from the Jets,
right.
Which is really going to help them a lot. Now, this call was before then. With Richardson, it's a lot closer than I thought it was before, but I still think the Giants have the best defense in the NFC for sure. The Broncos are certainly able to make claim, too. That's an outstanding D in Denver.
No, but this. That's why I'm excited about this Giants squad. I just think defense wins when it comes to, listen, when Coughlin, when he won the last two Super Bowls, it was the defense that was winning the game. There was some big plays made, but it was defense, you know, smacking around Tom Brady. All right, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Ed in Maryland. Ed, how you doing today?
How you doing, guys? Thanks for having me.
What's up, Eddie?
I just wanted to talk about the Giants. I'm really excited for this team this season. I really believe this team could be on the verge of averaging maybe 30-plus points a game and, you know, getting at least like 11 to 12 wins. My only concern, honestly, I know you guys probably disagree with me, is Eli Manning. And I'm not sure if many people talked about it, but even on the play in a Jets game, in a preseason game, John Jerry gave him the pressure, but Eli Manning has a penchant for missing wide-open guys. I know on that same play, he had Sterling Shepard wide open, but he makes his pre-snap read and then makes a decision on where to go with the ball, even while the play is developed, but guys are breaking open. And I'm just not really sure if that's going to carry over into the season. And, you know, he just always, you know, misses focusing on the fourth quarter. And I think this team with this offense, we have an offense that should average 30 plus points a game. We should have the mindset to actually put teams away early and not, you know, make it a struggle game, you know, for the first three quarters and then the fourth quarter actually, you know, start to play football.
Well,
Well,
you know what, Eddie, and thank you for the call. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think Paul, as soon as we're off the air, you ought to go into Ben and say Geno Smith has to be the starting quarterback for the rest of the season.
Because obviously Eli can't get it done, right?
God, I mean, you can't make everybody happy.
Wow.
Thank you for the call, Ed, but I mean, if with everything going on, if that's the guy you're worried about, God bless.
Can I just say one thing to you, Russ?
What's that?
In all of the naysayers, and there are those who really dislike Eli for whatever reason, okay, I have never heard the reason given that he's not reading defenses properly and he's focusing on – I mean, I haven't heard that since he was a rookie. He is one of the smartest, if not the smartest, a scheme reader and quarterbacks right now in the NFL. You got to find another reason if you want to throw darts at him, because that's not going to work.
You know what? In this town and with Giant, people are throwing darts all the time. I know you remember this. You remember sitting, again, old Giant Stadium, across the way, sitting.
Hey, Boot Sims.
Sims. Remember Parcells would be sitting there, smoking his Marlboro, sitting there, and he'd look at everybody, you know. You guys are all going to say, you know, that number 11 – he really was pretty good. Am I right?
He used to say all the time, generations from now, you'll be sitting there saying, that guy ain't no Phil Sims.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, it's just, you can't make everybody happy. I mean, if Eli Manning is the Giants' problem, it's a very, very nice problem to have.
Yeah.
It's a very,
I'll
very
you
nice
on that
problem.
One, Russ.
Let's go to your shrink and tell him Eli's your problem, and he's going to say, you got nothing
by
to
the
worry
way,
about.
If Eli's got so much trouble focusing on one receiver and not reading the defenses too well, how are they going to score 30 a game, which is what the caller also professed?
No, listen.
How's that going to happen?
I would like Eli, you know, there's certain things. Listen, everybody, you know, can overthrow somebody, get a little, you know, quick feet, something like that. But, you know, to me, in terms of reading and what, you know, if you want to complain about missing a pass now and then, okay.
No doubt.
I don't think Eli's – I want to say this the right way. And I think that's also sometimes because of personnel that he had, and I think you're going to see it improve this year.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eli's a lot stronger on his longer passes than he is on screens. And I think this year you're going to see more screen movement as well. What do you think?
Well, I don't necessarily know if you're going to see screens, but I do think you'll see a lot more short, medium range passes.
I guess I should have said that. You know, yeah, that's what I'm talking
about. Because I don't think
the
offensive line's athletic enough to run a lot of screens.
Right. Okay, that's fair enough. Not necessarily a screen, but those short.
The short stuff, yeah.
Short type passes.
Yeah, Ben McAdoo said 2 weeks ago this is the best he's seen Eli look in the 4 years that Ben's been with the organization.
Listen, watching him in practice and all through training camp, I think he looked terrific. So we will see what happens. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. Give us a call. Get in touch with us. Right now, let's go to Dave in Cranford. Dave, how are you today, my friend?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. Great to talk to you. And I think, like Paul, I'm ready to play this game, you know, Sunday night. I'm a little overanalyzed between, you know, everything going into the first game, and you know, but to go there, I do want to say, Paul, I'd love to get and you know, Sweater, you too, but I'd love, Paul, to get your thoughts on this comment, and that is, I really give McAdoo a lot of credit, because coming off of his first season and a playoff season and a season that they won 11 games, overachieved in many ways. He didn't, you know, a good coach doesn't sit and get complacent, right? And they really went and I think did a lot of self-scouting and a lot of self-analysis. And the roster changes, they may be subtle, right? They weren't the big ones that everybody wanted, you know, new left tackle, new whole new line, you know, that sort of stuff. But the tight end positions and those types of positions and the fullback position, I think they really self-scouted. And when I look at matching up with Dallas, I see us going in saying, hey, you know what? We can prepare for Dallas with the same way, knowing what they are. I think they have a much harder time preparing for us, because I think there's a lot more changes on our side, on the offense side of the ball. And I'd love to get Paul's comments on that.
Well, I do think the Giants still have a decisive matchup advantage over the Cowboys if you look at the 53 and certainly the starting 22. I don't think there's any doubt about that, and especially when you consider that the Giants' defense is virtually intact, and that's what controlled those two games against the Cowboys last year. The Giants' defense controlled those games. They were responsible for the Giants winning those two games. Dallas's defense, they may have as many as six different starters this week that did not start the playoff game at the end of last season. And they're all inexperienced guys. That's not good. We know from history, from being around the league a lot of years, Russ, that when you totally revamp a defense like that, chances are, now it didn't happen with the Giants last year, they bucked the system, but chances are your defense is going to be bad for about a month or so.
Yeah.
So I think this matchup favors the Giants very, very strongly. And I would also add one other thing to you. You know how I talk all the time about domino effect and how football is truly a spider web and how every little thing affects everything else? Well, that's what's so key about what you said with the tweaks that the Giants made on offense, signing Brandon Marshall, you know, bringing in Gallman and helping out with the running game in terms of adding to depth in the backfield, bringing in Fluker, helping out maybe push the offensive line, bringing in Red Ellison. These are all little things that have spiderweb effects on making the offense better.
Dave, thank you for the call. Red Ellison, you know, he was
– love him.
The caller, one of the callers was earlier – was it Ed in Maryland?
Might have been.
Saying,
Len, I think Len.
Len, Sterling Shepard flying under the radar, or maybe he's being forgotten about. I'll tell you what, a guy who is flying under the radar, because if you speak to everybody around here and within the Giant organization, and everybody's excited about Evan Engram, but Red Ellison is going to be very, very important. That was a huge signing in the offseason. I mean, you talk about the point of attack. He's going to be so important to this offense. He's going to be what they didn't have last year.
The Vikings did not want to lose him.
No, they didn't.
But they were not in a position to financially make the kind of commitment that the Giants were able to make to steal him. And I know the people in the Minnesota organization were very disappointed. They knew they weren't going to be able to keep him. And that's their loss, because this guy can really help a team.
Yeah, he's another one, again. They signed free agents last year on defense. We were talking about in terms of bringing talent, bringing leadership along with their talent. they're going to get the same thing on offense from Red Ellison.
Yes.
The same kind of individual. And they, listen, kudos to Jerry Reese and the whole staff, because they picked some winners with that group. I will tell you that, big time. Andre in Rochester. What's up, Andre?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
What's going on?
I'm really loving this roster and how it looks. I just have one little problem. My dark horse, Dante Dion, didn't get on the squad.
Say that again?
And I'm trying to – Double D.
Right.
Dante Dion. And it's kind of – I'm kind of trying to wrap my mind around how did he get first-team snaps to end it back up on the practice squad. And I'd love to hear Paul's point of that. And I'll let you guys go. Thanks, man.
Okay. And I know why he's asking me, because I've been pushing Dante Dion for 2 years. Right. I'm a big fan.
I know you are.
Very simple. Dante Dion physically is much more suited to be a slot corner because of his small size in this league, okay? The Giants had an opportunity shortly before the deadline came up the other day. In fact, it was within the hour that they were able to make a trade, a conditional seventh-round pick with the Steelers for Ross Cockrell, who is a boundary corner who can also play some slot, and they believe that based on his 2 years of experience prior in the NFL, where he's had well over two dozen, I believe, passes defensed, they believe that there was more value there in getting the bigger, more physical corner who can maybe provide a little more versatility on the 53. And so Dante Dion was brought back to the practice squad because the coaches like him. They know he's got skills, but maybe not the general overall resume that a guy like Cockrell has.
But, you know, this Giants practice squad becomes very interesting.
They got some guys.
Well, exactly. And we're talking about, again, we talk about depth leads to competition, to pushing players. You know, we were talking about Travis Rudolph before. Nobody can relax. There is talent on that practice squad. If God forbid, and I say God forbid because you don't want anybody to be injured, but at certain positions, they have guys who can come up and play. It's not like, oh, my goodness, we got to check the waiver wire or what right away. They have guys that can play. So depth is something that the Giants have this season to the extent of which they didn't have, you know, for the past few years. What'd you say, 2012? I think that's a fair estimate.
Yeah, I thought the 2012 team was a playoff team coming off of that Super Bowl, and obviously it didn't work out so well. But going in, I did think that was going to be a pretty good team.
All right, Scott. In the Bronx. Scotty, what's up, my friend?
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope everyone's having a great day.
You too.
I've got a comment and a question, and then let you guys give your opinion of it. Should the Giants, and I'm a diehard Giant fan, should the Giants not do as well going into the playoffs this year? Who gets held accountable? First, and the reason I bring this question up, Tom Coughlin was let go. I understand they said they made a need to change or did not retain him. Though the team never quit on Tom Coughlin, he didn't have the players.
Hold on 1 second. Did you say the team, Scott, quit on Tom Coughlin?
No. The opposite. I'm saying they played for Tom Coughlin.
Right.
They played, and they weren't a great talented group. And they were like six games they could have won either way. They could have been 10-6 versus 6-10. So we just put that to the side. It's in the past now.
Right.
My question is now, again, and I'm thinking as the owner, you've made this investment in defense. It was, Jerry Reese made some good selections, and let's give the credit where credit's due at that. However, he had a big purse to go out and buy, you know, to fix this, and he did. My question again goes in where he's made some brilliant moves as selecting on defense. Collins was one perfect move, outstanding move. But I go back to my original statement, and Paul, you and I have been on the phone a few times about this. The battles are won in the trenches. For the last 4 years, the Giants have not, I feel, done enough to solidify that offensive line. I can't stand the Cowboys, but I got to give them their props. Their offensive line, they went from ground zero and built it. The Giants here have made some good moves with a few here and there, but they didn't solidify it and finish the deal. I guess the end of my conversation here is, let's say, let's hope it doesn't happen, if the Giants don't go deep into the playoffs, when you reevaluate as the owner, Do you look at your management, or do you look at your coaching at this?
Well,
where I have that question. I'm sorry, guys.
No. Well, Scott, thanks for the call. That question can't be answered leading up to game one.
No.
We don't know if, first of all, I mean, you get into the playoffs, no one's being said goodbye to, okay, unless something cockeyed happens. But you're talking about a situation, if they don't go far into the playoffs. Well, what is far? One game? Is it two games? And why was the failure? How can you figure out who and what's to blame if you don't know what happened or why the team failed?
I think part of the frustration, and Russ, I am a trenches guy, and I've been crying for many, many years about having to, you know, bolster the offensive line much as possible.
We've all been bellyaching about that.
But here's what you have to remember when you complain about it, if that's the proper word. You have to go back onto the calendar and say, okay, at that given time, what was available? What could they have gotten with the resources that they had, with the picks that they had, where they were picking, and how much money they had under the salary cap? And the other part to this equation, if you can answer those three questions, the other part you have to answer is, okay, which one of the available quality offensive linemen that you wanted to target was willing then to come here? Because it takes two people to make a deal. It takes the team to make the deal, and it takes that player who's available, the free agent, to say, I want to come here and sign with you. Well, guess what? A guy like Whitworth, who was the premier offensive tackle in free agency this year, he wasn't coming to the Giants because they didn't have enough cap room to sign him. So you can't criticize the Giants or Jerry Reese for not going out to get a premier free agent left tackle this year because they could not afford to get one.
And I also believe, you can agree, you can disagree. Again, the number is 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants chat. You know, Jerry said something in training camp. This offensive unit has now taken a lot of snaps together. And he genuinely believes, and it whether it's right or it's wrong, we're going to find out.
Mm-hmm.
He believes that experience together will start paying some dividends this season.
Continuity.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, you know, we're going to find out. Now, maybe it's not going to work out, but we're going to find out soon enough. But as Paul says, it's very easy to say we need better. Who's better? It's always easy to say who's better. This guy is no good. Okay, well, what are you going to replace him with? That's the big question.
I'm going to go back to another old-timer of ours, George Young, who used to say, you better have the answer before you ask the question. Remember?
Sitting there with his hand on his head. But you know what? I'm glad you brought up George Young. Just talking about holding people responsible for picks. Who was a running back? Top guy at Blair Thomas. Remember the Jets? He's number one pick for the Jets?
Sure.
Blair Thomas. I remember George telling me, he said, Ross, everybody, Giants included, everybody had Blair Thomas as the top pick in the draft.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had Blair Thomas. It didn't work out. So everybody was going to be wrong. Sometimes it just happens that way.
It does.
You know, last year, John Mara had said, going in, after they went and got the three guys, Snacks, OV, and Jenkins, and I keep referring to them because they're such a vital part of what's going on with the Giants, it's really dangerous to try and rebuild a complete like unit.
Oh, yeah.
Through free agency.
Odds are not good.
Odds are not good, and it's very much against it. So they really stepped in it last year with those three guys because they paid dividends talent-wise. They paid dividends leadership-wise in the locker room. It doesn't usually work out that way. So, I mean, but if you're asking who's to blame at the end of the season or in the playoffs when we're not to the first game, boy, that's talking about putting the cart before the horse.
Man.
It sounds like you.
All wow.
Right, back to the phones we go. Let's go to Nick in the Meadowlands. Nick A., what's going on?
Hey,
hello?
How you doing, fellas?
What's up, Nick?
All right. How you doing, Paul?
Hi.
Hi. it's funny. My daughters, they're in middle school, and the principal, he's a big Giants fan. He's a huge Giants fan, but he's got all the pictures. My favorite one, he's got OC, he's got Strahan, and he's got Tuck, and they're walking away from Brady on his back.
It's a good picture.
Signed and everything.
Right.
But he's not a big Giant fan as big as me. I got the ink. I got the NY and everything tattooed on me. I'm the bigger fan.
Right.
I went through the pain for the Giants. But anyway, he's one of these. It's to the point, though, where I can't even talk to him about the Giants anymore. He comes to me, and he's like, oh, they look good, huh? But I wouldn't talk to him anymore because he's one of the biggest Eli haters ever.
Oh.
I mean, anything that happens, it's Eli's fault. And it got to the point I said, you know what, I don't want to talk to him.
How could you be?
When he's gone, you're going to be the same guy, like you were saying about Sims before.
Yes.
You're going to be the same guy that says, oh, you know, he won 2 Super Bowl MVPs. Come on, man. You know, all these people, you know, these fans, they want Super Quarterback every year, you know?
Let me ask you a question, Nick.
Not reality every
how
year.
Can anybody be? How can anybody be a big Giants fan and hate Eli Manning? I mean, that's.
I hear so many of them, Russ. I'm telling you, I live in the area for many, many years, and I hear so many of them. Anything
these are the same
Knicks
fans
Eli
who hated Patrick Ewing.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, come on. Really? I mean, oh my! We got to have Shrink Day. Shrink Day.
Russ, I've been dealing with this for years. Trust me.
Oh,
it's ridiculous.
I mean, if you want to say, you know, this player or that player, Nick, gives me some agita, okay. But you're going to say this guy hates Eli Manning and he's a big Giant fan.
Every year he wants another quarterback.
This guy says
we need to get rid of Eli. We need to get rid of Eli.
This sounds like a split personality wackadoo. Let me tell you,
yeah.
I mean, that doesn't sound normal.
I hear a few of them, though. They want to see one of these mobile quarterbacks when you got the Russell Wilsons out there and all this.
You know what? I'm glad you said that. Nick, thank you for the call. I'm glad you said that about a mobile quarterback. God love David Tyree. And I'm going to say this because it goes over and over again. Every time I hear, what are you doing? Who are you waving? Flies?
There are gnats in here.
Oh, gnats.
Yeah.
You sure you didn't bring it in from outside? He's waving. I mean, I thought I'm in like a loony bin or something. Paul's waving. We're on camera. The people can see you waving.
Hello. Go ahead.
We're talking about you made me lose my
Pocket quarterback compared to a runner.
Oh, no. So we were talking about David Tyree. Everybody talks about the catch. The catch off the helmet in the
right.
Super Bowl. That catch, David Tyree doesn't get a chance
right.
to make that catch off his helmet without the outstanding strength getting out of trouble. I mean, Eli was being dragged down like 3 times on that play. Am I correct?
Yes.
Let's fast forward a few years to the last Super Bowl. How tough was Eli dealing with getting hit and getting out of trouble in San Francisco? How tough was Eli Manning?
One of the most toughest, guttiest performances
ever.
I've ever seen.
You won't see a quarterback play a tougher game than Eli Manning.
But that principal doesn't like him.
My principal. I got a few words for that principal. Can we say it on a website?
No, we can't.
I'm thinking it's at the tip of my tongue.
Oh.
Maron, jeez, let me tell you. Chris in Florida. Chris, how you doing today?
Hey, stranger. What's up, P-Dot?
How you doing?
I'm loving it. I'm scared to death of this hurricane, but I'm more concerned with Eli playing big like we know he can because I'm saying he's the key to beating Dallas. Do you agree, Paul? What's up?
Eli's the key to beating Dallas? You really want to say that the Giants' chances of beating the Cowboys are on one guy's shoulders? You honestly want to say that?
I want to say all things considered.
Great.
All things considered, right? We know the defense. We know what our defense brings to the table. We're planning on beating the crap out of Dallas with our defense. But we can't wear out the defense in game one. We need Eli to step up for the simple fact that we know the O-line has struggled. We know the running game has struggled. We know we have problems with little nicks and bruises to our wide receiving core, Odell and Brandon, right? So what do you think?
Well, Chris, let me ask you a question. First, and this is the priority, where in Florida are you?
Tampa area.
Tampa area. Okay. Are you staying down there or are you getting out of Dodge?
I'm staying at the moment.
Well, God love you. Most importantly, you and your family, Chris.
Yes, be safe.
Please stay safe, and thank you for the call. But my goodness, you have a terrible, terrible hurricane breathing down your necks, and your priority to worry should not be Eli Manning and the Giants.
Look,
quite frankly, this is Russ Salzberg, and even Paulie Dotz, the giant among all giants, saying, if it's between you being safe and a win on Sunday, screw the win on Sunday. Let everybody get out of Florida safe. Am I right?
And not only that, the poor people in Houston who are still trying to recover from what they've got.
I mean, please.
But to your football point, if you really want me to answer you, the truth of the matter is the Giants have a decisive matchup advantage over the Cowboys in many areas. And to just isolate it and say that Eli has to step up big, I think is really an oversight on your part because, you know, the Giants defensively should be able to contain whatever the Cowboys throw at them. They did it last year twice. They should be able to do it again. And then on the other side of the ball, we believe the Giants' offense has improved. We believe it's more versatile. They should not need Eli to throw the ball 45 times to win this game, Russ.
No, I wouldn't want him throwing it that many times. Let me ask you this question, Paul. You know, sometimes there are intangibles involved in every game. Do you think the Cowboys get a psychological boost, talking about an intangible now, knowing that Ezekiel Elliott can play on Sunday night where they weren't sure a couple of days?
I think it's more of a distraction, this whole Ezekiel Elliott story for me. And I've talked to some of the former Giants players. I haven't talked so much to the current guys about the impact it will have on the Cowboys. But some of our guys on the broadcast team have all said to me, look, if I were in that situation, I would want to be dealing with this every day. It's more of a distraction than it is anything else. It's taken my mental sharpness off the game.
Yeah, but I still think if you're a Dallas Cowboy, you would, and he's your teammate.
You'd rather have him.
You'd rather have him. Listen,
but how ready is he going to be, Russ? He hasn't hardly played at all in the preseason, and he's supposed to be a bell cow back. He needs rhythm. He needs toughness. He's not ready to get pounded by snacks.
I'm not saying no, but at the same point, and I'm just saying, I'm not saying he's going to be the deciding factor, you know, for the Cowboys. I'm talking about intangibles, but we could say the same thing. If from a Dallas standpoint, somebody can be saying, well, this whole business with OBJ, how ready is he going to be? You know, I mean, I guess
it's not nearly the controversial topic.
No, I'm not remote.
You know, Elliott's thing has blown up and taken on a life of its own.
I will say this. I think those particular situations – and it's a lousy situation. We all know how bad domestic violence is. So that aside, I find, and you've been in enough locker rooms to know that, not just giant locker rooms, mm-hmm. players, the sanctity within that locker room, they get asked the questions, but they go about their business. They still have to come to work every day, and they tend, when I say zone it out, it doesn't like they don't care. They zone it out. This is what I have to do.
It goes on a shelf.
This is what I have to do. It's just the way it is. You remember years ago, Wade Boggs, Margot Gate. Mm-hmm. Did he ever? No, I'm serious. And I remember talking to him about it when he came to the Yankees. And he said to me his sanctity was between the lines.
Yeah,
that's when he was safe. He was playing games. So that's to me, that's how I view it.
I want to give you a couple of numbers here, Russ, just for you know, whistles and giggles here. Eli Manning, despite the fact that, you know, he's played the Cowboys 25 times and only has a 13-12 career record against them, not because he has failed. Because in those games, he's got a 61% completion mark, averaging 250 yards a game, and 48 touchdown passes against only 25 interceptions. That's nearly a 2-1 ratio. So I understand that Dallas and Tony Romo and stuff over the course of the years, in a lot of ways, they've snake bit the Giants and won a lot of close games and dramatic games. I get all of that. But it's not because Eli's performed poorly. Because those who will criticize him and want to criticize, you know, his interceptions, well, 48 touchdowns to 25 picks in 25 games. I'll take that ratio any day of the week. It's not on him.
What would the guy say? It was a principal who was a Giant fan but hates Eli? That's a principal with a split personality. All right, John in Las Vegas. Johnny, how are you today?
Hello, fellas. Hello, Russ. Hello, Paul.
What's going on, John?
I just have one observation and one question. And I do want to say I love all the people there, but I kind of like talking to the older guys a little better.
Gee, thanks.
the older guys.
The observation quickly is that I think if the Giants have the killer instinct on both sides of the ball, that will be the last key to all this great personnel they have.
Well, John, I mean, a killer instinct is fine, but you have to have the talent to go along with the killer instinct. And we have to see, you know, the offensive line continue to improve, killer instinct mm-hmm. or no killer instinct.
I believe mm-hmm. last year Eli Manning was second among quarterbacks in the NFL in fourth quarter come-from-behind victories, you know, game-winning drives. And the Giants' defense certainly nailed down a bunch of those in the final couple of minutes because the offense was unable to run out the four-minute offense and kill the clock. So I think both offensively with Eli and with that defense being able to put the final nail in the coffin, that's killer instinct to me. I think they've got that. I think this group in that room right now, I don't worry about that.
John, thank you for the call, my friend. We're getting ready on the season. Let's take one more quick call before we get ready to wrap things up here. Let's go down to Atlanta and speak with Greg. Greg, how you doing?
Hey, how you guys doing, man?
All right, we don't have a lot of time, so what do you want to say there, Greggy?
I'm going to try to make it fast. I have a couple of points. One, I was listening to the show the other day, and the debate was about Landon Collins and how good is he. And you know, they was talking about the first tier safety, the great ones, the Ronnie Lotts and the other guys in the second tier. Okay, I'm calling in to say I think Landon Collins is definitely in the first tier and destined to be great based off what we've seen so far in his first 2 years. I put him as the best strong safety in the league right now.
Well, you know,
because I read some stuff. Landon Collins last year had 100 tackles, 5 interceptions, 4 sacks, 13 passes defensed, and that's never been done by any safety in the NFL.
Greg, you thanks for the call, buddy. You're preaching to the choir. Let me say this. I don't want to say he's the greatest ever.
You don't want to put him in Canton, Russ. Not yet.
Who do you say is the first one?
He mentioned Ronnie Lott.
Ronnie Lott. Let's not say Ronnie Lott. However, I will say this about Landon Collins. Again, somebody might say a big drop. I don't know how the hell he was drafted in the second round. How he wasn't a first rounder behooves me. I mean, I just don't understand that. It's shocking to me. And as far as when we talk about great athletes, who you would probably say the best athlete on the Giants is
Beckham.
Well, let me tell you, if Beckham is one, then Landon Collins is 1A. and I'm telling you, that's how good Landon Collins is. He is the absolute entire package. Last year, I remember him the first year, and I don't know if you remember this. I thought Landon, started 16 games. Landon was a quiet rookie. He went about his business, wasn't talking a lot. Going into last year, from the get-go, it's like he decided, I'm going to be a leader. I'm going to be the whole package. He just evolved on the field, off the field. He is, again, Ronnie Lott is saying a mouthful. But I'll tell you something. You know what? This man stays on the right track. We're talking Ed Reed. You're talking Polamalu. I mean, he's a tremendous, tremendous talent.
I would just give you one thumbnail and tell you that Deion Grant, a former Giants Super Bowl champion, has been somewhat of a mentor to Landon Collins away from the field and has made it his business. He comes up here and visits a lot to always seek out Landon and has done so since he was drafted by the Giants. And I think that Deion rubbed off on him a lot, and I think that's a really great benefit.
He just wants to be better all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, his attitude is he loves to play what the Janoris Jenkins calls him, contact crazy.
Yes.
He loves to play. Yes. He loves to hit. He's a big, strong young man and a tremendous talent. And that right now, folks, is a wrap on Big Blue Kickoff. For Paul Dottino, I'm Russ Salzberg. We'll see you next week.